Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI.
Okay, let's dive into a truly foundational text, Chinua Achebe's Things Fall Apart. For this deep dive, we're really aiming to get past just the plot points. Our mission, you could say, is to unpack its central message about cultural collision, and especially how Kitty portrayed pre-colonial African society, you know, not as primitive, but as deeply complex, fully human.
Absolutely. And the context here is just so important. Achebe, born 1930 in Nigeria, he literally grew up on the fault line between traditional Igbo culture and British colonial rule.
Right.
And he wrote this book with a very clear purpose, to push back against those, well, often racist, one-dimensional Western narratives. You know, think Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness.
Yeah, a book he famously critiqued.
Exactly. He wanted to tell African stories from an African perspective with dignity and authenticity.
And that title, Things Fall Apart. He didn't pull any punches. He took it straight from Yeats's poem, The Second Coming.
Mm-hmm.
Signaling disintegration right from the start. Chaos.
It immediately tells you this is about a world breaking down. And publishing it in 1958, just before Nigeria's independence, I mean, talk about a literary earthquake.
It really was, giving voice to a world that had been silenced, or at least heavily distorted.
So the core story is the tragedy of Okonkwo. He's this respected, very ambitious warrior in Umuofia, this fictional Igbo village.
And his world, both inside him and the society around him, just gets systematically dismantled when the European colonizers and missionaries show up.
It's all about that collision, isn't it? Sophisticated, established way of life hitting this external force bent on changing everything.
Domination and transformation. That was the goal.
So let's set that stage first. Umuofia itself. Achebe is careful not to present some kind of simple, lost Eden.
No, not at all. That's what's brilliant. He spends the whole first part painting this really rich three-dimensional picture. This isn't the primitive Africa of the colonial imagination.
What does that look like?
Well, you see, they have their own form of democracy, a justice system, the Igugu, these masked ancestral spirits who act as judges. It's about formalized law.
Okay.
They have complex spirituality, deep community bonds, art.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole functioning society.
And right at the center is Okonkwo. He's our tragic hero, and if you look closely, he's driven by something very specific.
Obsession.
Yes. His entire life is basically a reaction against his father, Unoka.
Who he saw as weak, gentle, loved music, but was in debt.
Exactly. And Okonkwo's biggest fear, his absolute defining trait, isn't his strength, it's his fear of appearing weak like his father, fear of failure.
He pushes himself relentlessly, achieves status, titles, multiple wives, huge barns of yams, the symbol of masculine success in Uofia.
But that same fierce drive, that rigidity, it becomes his fatal flaw.
And that rigidity is reflected in the society too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Achebe shows the wisdom and the beauty, but he doesn't shy away from the harsh parts.
He doesn't romanticize it.
No. He includes things like the abandonment of twins in the evil forest, the sometimes quite brutal justice. There are flaws, internal pressures.
Which seems counterintuitive, maybe. If his goal is to show sophistication, why include the harsh stuff? Is he trying to make us less sympathetic?
I think it's about honesty. It's Achebe showing the internal complexities, the contradictions that existed before the colonizers.
Ah, okay.
If Umuofia was perfect, then its fall would just be simple victimization. But by showing these internal cracks, these moral ambiguities,
it makes the later fracturing, the appeal of the missionaries to some, more understandable.
Exactly. The new religion offered something to those who were marginalized by the old ways, the outcasts, the Osu, even someone like Onye.
That brings us to Ikefafuna. He's maybe the first major emotional turning point.
Definitely. He's this boy given to Umuofia as a peace offering. He lives with Okonkwo's family for 3 years.
Becomes like a son to Okonkwo, a real brother to Onwe, Okonkwo's actual son.
And then comes the tragedy. The oracle decrees Ikemefuna must be sacrificed. Okonkwo is explicitly warned not to take part.
But his fear of weakness.
He can't stand the thought of anyone thinking he's soft. So he participates. He actually delivers the killing blow himself.
Oh, that's brutal.
It's devastating. It shatters something inside Okonkwo, and it irrevocably damages his relationship with Onwaya, who witnesses it.
So that's the sort of spiritual crack-up, and the physical removal isn't far behind.
Right. At a funeral, his gun accidentally explodes, killing a clan member. It's an accident, a crime against the Earth Goddess, but unintentional.
But the punishment is severe.
7 years of exile in his mother's homeland, Mbanta, and they burn his compound, his home, to cleanse the land.
And this exile, this removal, it happens at the worst possible time, narratively speaking.
Catastrophic timing. Because while Okonkwo is away, stewing, feeling kind of emasculated and disconnected, that's precisely when the European missionaries arrive in Amorphia.
The first wave of the change he eventually comes back to.
And Achebe shows they aren't monolithic. You get different approaches to colonialism.
Right, there's Mr. Brown first.
The patient one. Builds schools, a hospital. He actually tries to understand Igbo beliefs, respects some aspects of the culture. He plays the long game.
Subtle influence.
Then he's replaced by Reverend James Smith.
A zealot.
Completely different. Rigid, intolerant, sees everything Igbo as evil. He actively provokes conflict.
So you see colonialism working through both gradual persuasion and direct confrontation.
Exactly. And it's this new world, particularly the Christian message of love and acceptance, that appeals to Inouye.
Okonkwo's son. He's been alienated by his father's harshness and deeply traumatized by Ikemefuna's death, the abandoned twins.
He finds a refuge in the new religion. His conversion is symbolic of that deep split the colonizers created. They managed to win over some of our brothers, as the book says.
Creating that internal division.
Precisely. So Okonkwo finally finishes his exile, comes back after 7 years.
And finds a Umofia he barely recognizes.
It's completely changed. There are colonial courts now, a new administration making rules. The traditional authority of the elders is shattered. The fragmentation is profound.
Things really start to unravel then. The breaking point seems to come under Reverend Smith's aggressive approach.
Yes. One of his converts, Enoch, who's particularly zealous, commits the ultimate sacrilege. He unmasks an egugu in public.
A direct attack on their spiritual and judicial system.
Supreme blasphemy. The clan's reaction is swift. They burn down Enoch's compound and the church.
But then comes the counter move from the colonizers.
The district commissioner, the DC, tricks the clan leaders, including Okonkwo, into a meeting. Then he has them arrested, imprisoned.
And humiliated, shaved, beaten, held for ransom.
That humiliation is key. It's not just physical defeat. It's the degradation of their leaders that seems to break the community spirit, their will to resist collectively.
Okonkwo just can't process this. He sees surrender, appeasement.
He only understands defiance. So when court messengers arrive later to stop another clan meeting,
he acts. He draws his machete and kills one of the head messengers.
Expecting, maybe hoping, this will finally ignite the uprising. A war.
But it doesn't. The reaction is silence. Confusion.
His own people are frozen, shocked, perhaps terrified. They let the other messengers escape. And in that moment, Okonkwo realizes he's completely alone. The collective will is broken.
His world really has fallen apart.
And that leads him to his final act.
Yeah.
He goes home and hangs himself. Commit suicide.
Which is itself an abomination in Igbo culture. A terrible end.
He dies trying to uphold his sense of honor, his idea of strength, but in doing so, commits a final act that pollutes the land according to his own traditions. He can't even be buried by his clansmen.
It's left to his friend, Obiorika, to explain this to the district commissioner. That line is just devastating. You drove him to kill himself, and now he will be buried like a dog.
The raw grief and anger there.
And then Achebe delivers the final, coldest cut, the ultimate irony.
The district commissioner's reaction.
Yeah. He hears about this immense tragedy, the fall of this great man, the symbol of this cultural collapse.
And his thought isn't about the human cost. It's clinical. Detached.
He thinks, this might make an interesting anecdote, maybe a paragraph in my book.
The book he's planning to write, The Pacification of the Primitive Tribes of the Lower Niger.
Ugh. It just reduces everything Okonkwo's life, the entire cultural upheaval, to a footnote in a self-serving colonial report.
That shift in perspective in the final lines, from the intense intimacy of the Igbo world to the cold, dismissive gaze of the colonizer, that's part of Achebe's genius. It's structurally brilliant.
Let's talk a bit more about that narrative style. Achebe wasn't just telling a story, he was forging a new way to tell it, right? In English, but not quite standard English.
Exactly. He called it African English. He masterfully blends English vocabulary with Igbo sentence structures, rhythms, proverbs, and concepts. It forces the reader, you, to engage with the Igbo worldview on its own terms.
He uses proverbs constantly, like that famous line, proverbs are the palm oil with which words are eaten.
Showing the richness and sophistication of their oral tradition, their communication. And he integrates Igbo words like chi.
Often translated as personal god or destiny.
Yeah, but it's deeper, more complex than that. It's about the relationship between an individual and their fate, their spirit. By leaving words like chi untranslated, Achebe insists on the validity of the Igbo conceptual universe. It can't just be flattened into English equivalents.
The symbolism is incredibly totem, too, like the locusts that descend on Umuofia early in the book.
Yes. At first, they seem like a boon, right? Everyone's excited, gathering them for food. They're overwhelming, covering everything. But initially, they're welcomed.
A perfect metaphor for the colonizers.
Absolutely. They arrive, bringing new things, maybe some initial benefits or attractions. Before you realize they're this all-consuming force that fundamentally changes the landscape, strips it bare.
And Okonkwo himself is associated with fire. He's called the Roaring Flame.
Symbolizing that intense, powerful, but ultimately destructive passion and anger he carries.
He's always worried his son Amwoya will be like cold, impotent ash.
Right. But he fails to see that his own fire, uncontrolled, just consumes everything around him, including himself and the foundations of his world.
So if you had to boil down the core theme, it goes back to that idea of division, doesn't it? More than just conquest from the outside.
Definitely. Think about that quote from Obiorica again, near the end. He, the white man, has put a knife on the things that held us together, and we have fallen apart.
That knife metaphor is so sharp. It's the key, really.
It explains the mechanism. Colonialism didn't just win with guns. It won by exploiting existing tensions and creating new internal divisions.
Setting brother against brother, like with Nwoya.
Right.
Winning over those who felt marginalized by the traditional system.
Making unified resistance impossible. The center could not hold because it was deliberately fractured from within.
It leaves you with such heavy questions. Can a society adapt to overwhelming external forces without losing its soul? What's the real cost of change? And maybe centrally, why is that kind of rigid, fearful masculinity so destructive?
Okonkwo's personal tragedy mirrors the larger societal tragedy. His inability to bend, to adapt, mirrors the way the culture's own rigidities were exploited.
It really feels like a timeless warning about what happens when people fail to see the humanity in others, especially when one group assumes it knows best for everyone, assumes its way is the only way.
I think the novel remains so vital because it forces us to confront that human cost of cultural arrogance. It shows that the fall of a civilization isn't an abstract historical event. It's made up of countless individual stories of loss, confusion, and despair. It's never just a paragraph in someone else's book.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.